today we are back with our soy envoys. Before we dive in, let's look at the USDA Weekly Crop Progress Report that came out last Monday. So, for the week ending April 14th, statewide, soybeans planted was at 4% compared to the five-year average of 1%. Corn planted reached 3% compared to the five-year average of 4%. Winter wheat headed reached 5% compared to the five-year average of 3%. And winter wheat condition was rated mostly good at 64%, with fair at 16% and excellent at 14%. The weekly drought monitor will be released this morning. Statewide, the average temperature was 57.5 degrees, 7.6 degrees above normal. Precipitation averaged 0.97 inches, just a little below normal. Topsoil moisture supply was rated 5% very short, 10% short, 64% adequate, and 21% surplus. Then the subsoil moisture supply was rated 7% very short, 14% short, 64% adequate, and 15% surplus. I know, looking at the weather forecast today for me in my area in West Central Illinois, we're looking at frost this weekend, some colder temperatures overnight. And then I know there's storms for the southern half today, and we'll see what to make out of it. But let's go around and start our updates real quick. Shelby, you mentioned you'd like to go first, so I'll let you get right at it.
Good morning, all. Shelby Weckel from Ela Brothers Seeds in Thomasboro. Quick update on everything. We've actually got some guys that are starting in the field, and but we sent out a newsletter early this week that, and the question of the day, you know, what challenges do we see for the grower this year? That for this year right now is patience. You've got to be patient as we move forward here. Take your time. And we really encourage our growers to go out, check the fields, make sure they're right, because of inventory issues that we have this year for seed that is available. If you don't do it right the first time, you probably will not get back what you have in your bag in your shed right now, or what you would be picking up. So we want our guys to be take their time, be patient, educated, make a decision as you move forward based on the environment that you're going into, not just what the forecast is saying. So we've had a lot of our guys that have been patient through this rain, or what lack of rain there we got. They were calling for quite a bit of rain on Tuesday, and we ended up not getting virtually anything, maybe up to about 3/10 in a couple locations, but here in Flatville we received nothing. And they're calling for a chance tonight, and with the cool down in the temperatures, we don't want guys to get carried away. So be patient as you move forward here, and do some tillage work if you can, and get some spraying done in those fields, and get the weed control. The henbit is still rapidly staying purple in the field, so want to be able to get that taken care of. And when we start to warm up next week would be a great time to get started.
Like Shelby said, I posed a question of the day to our group here today. What unique challenge do you want farmers to keep top of mind as planting season gets fully underway? So Shelby said patience, which is a good one. I was hoping for some diverse answers. So if Shelby took yours, you'll have to think of a new answer. But let's go keep going around. Craig, if you want to give our next update.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I sit pretty close to Shelby, so she's spot on with what I've seen so far in this area. I did go to Springfield on Tuesday, and I would say once I got to Decatur and West, things were pretty active. I did see a little bit going on between Monticello and Decatur, but once I got to Decatur and West, it was pretty active. So there was a few planters you would see sitting, but overall, it was much more active. We were actually, one of the breeding trials was going in over by Pleasant Plains. So, you know, western side of the state, I'd say, is a little bit further along than the east central Illinois here. So, and I think, too, she hit on it. The cooler temperatures that we've got coming up here may give people a little bit of a pause and maybe not go quite as hard as they could. And just, you know, keep in mind, we can plant so fast now, it's maybe not as important to push as hard as maybe we once did. And then my unique challenge or my unique thought, you know, I sit in the breeding world, we create a ton of data. And I think maybe I took the question a little bit wrong, but I think I'm still going to give this answer is that, you know, when you start 2024 and planting, that's your beginning of 2024. And so capturing your data accurately, and holistically and how you want to track your 2024, it starts now. Making sure things are calibrated, connected, talking. You know, I know you could go back in 2023 and look at what you might have done for a herbicide burn down or a nutrient application, but I would think that's a little easier to track. But once we hit 24, you're going to want to know a little bit more for details, days of planting, what you're planting, where it's going, what fields, all those sorts of things, because it's not easy to go back and grab, depending on how you're capturing it. So, you know, in Bayer, we have teams upon teams that track data and keep track of it. You know, growers, they don't have that resource. Maybe they do if they've got partners, you know, with FieldView, Climate, John Deere Ops, whatever it may be, FS, you know, they have tools too. So you make sure you got your network, make sure you're connected with them and you know, work as a team to make sure you're getting what you want at the end of the day. So planning's the beginning, so let's start off on a good foot.
Thanks, Craig. I think that was an excellent answer. It reminds me of something Stephanie wrote, one of your earlier blogs, Stephanie, about communication is key. So I think that goes along with it. Communication on all fronts.
The other thing I'll point out too is driving across the countryside. It's a lot harder now to see what's been planted and what hasn't because of the way we've changed some of our practices and soybeans going in with corn and no-till and just different types of practices. It's a little harder to pinpoint. Was that planted or is it just what are they doing there? So, which is it's all good. And I should mention we have planted soybeans in our breeding trials. So we're trying to get more in line with what growers are doing, not on a whole scale like what farmers do, but we are dabbling with it. So it's good to see we're moving in that direction too.
Great. Thanks for that update, Craig. Drew, I'll hand it over to you.
Hey, good morning, everyone. So I would say I'm going to kind of cut my territory into two different areas. So the southern portion, the territory that Monmouth, Macomb, even south of Peoria, over into that area, very, very active. I actually have some operations that are going to be finishing up with beans here in the next few days. Now that area looks like it's going to be getting hit with rain here this morning. It kind of missed what we thought was going to be a pretty heavy rain event here a couple days ago, but looks like I'm pretty certain we're going to get some moisture that kind of comes up and looks like it hit throughout 39 and then maybe dissipates or so. As you go to the north, kind of that north Peoria, especially north of Route 80, the rains were much more spotty out of that earlier system this week. I think like Tuesday, and there are some areas there that got between a half inch to an inch. So there really isn't much planted up that way. Maybe if you guys push a lot of pre-plant was sprayed, things like that. Soil was mostly fit, but it's just kind of was that getting those wheels in motion ahead of the planter. By the time they got those things done, they got hit by another round of rain. So not a whole lot going on up there to the north. Maybe a little bit of planting here and there, but as we move to the south of that area, quite a bit, as Craig said, of activity that had moved through there. It kind of to go back to the challenges, I'm going to approach this a little bit differently. And so I know we talked a lot about henbit, but I was actually working ground at our El Paso PFR location yesterday, and I was amazed at the amount of other weeds we're beginning to see emerge. So I was there was quite a bit of lamb's quarter, it looked like seedlings emerge, a lot of those things that I just hadn't seen quite yet. And as we're going to hit another dose of rain that comes through here, that's going to allow some of these seedlings to really get a jump on us, especially if we're going to be out for a few days and we're going to be in some cooler temperatures where we just don't see the efficacy out of our herbicides when we don't have a rapidly growing plant. I think something that we forget about is we need good growing conditions for the crop to have good growing conditions for the weed to kill the weed. And we maybe don't think of that sometimes or think that those things are all connected. So to continue to monitor. Even if you are in a tillage situation where your henbit isn't a problem, henbit was not in any of these fields that I worked. But we were starting to see a lot of these other seedlings emerge. So kind of start beginning to keep an eye on that. I know growers aren't wanting another thing to look at or think about, but that might not be the worst thing to keep on the front of your mind either, is that we're going to start battling some of our quote unquote normal weed species that we hit every year.
Thanks, Drew. Yep. Keep scouting those fields, keep watching them, and making those notes as we move along here. Eric, I'll hand it over to you.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. So this week, we did get rain. We got some rain in the area that moved through Tuesday, but a lot of our area south of Champaign County, the counties that I cover all the way down to I-70, we're still pretty wet this week, so there wasn't a lot of activity. We had some pockets down around the Terre Haute area that was able to get some dry fertilizer and even some anhydrous done this week, but by and large, there wasn't a lot of activity just to the south of us. Planting, some guys are planting, but most guys are still in that holding pattern. There was yesterday with the wind and everything really shut everybody down, had just enough moisture. And, you know, with the windy conditions, not a lot of field activity for even dry fertilizer. It was just so windy. And, but really, you know, trying to think about, you know, controlling weeds and everything. And, you know, with this proposed kind of unique question, you know, something that I've been hit with here in the last few days, and I'd even mentioned this to our sales staff about a couple weeks ago in a sales meeting, was when we're thinking about our pre-emerge herbicide applications and those guys that do typically, you know, work ground, and this year with the amount of henbit and everything we had, you know, a lot of times we'll include a burn down type product that, you know, to control emerge weeds at the time we're putting our pre-plant residuals down. And then for those guys that are immediately chasing our sprayers with the tillage tools, my question is to the growers, what real effectiveness is that burn down type product really providing, you know, to the weeds that we're spraying? So is that, you know, herbicide, extra herbicide and tank mix really necessary if you are chasing, you know, the sprayer with tillage tools? So that would be my kind of unique thing kind of proposed to growers to think about as we're making herbicide applications, is, you know, what products and are they really necessary in the tank, depending on our cultural practices that we may be implementing. And then along with that, you know, with controlling emerge weeds and everything, would also like to get growers to think about that if we are using growth regulators specifically on soybeans, you know, there's a lot of different brands of 2,4-D. Ours that we use within the FS system is Radar. And if we look specifically at the Radar label, there's no mention about Enlist soybeans to be used with Enlist soybeans. And the one mention it does have with soybeans is that we have to wait 7 to 10 days if it's done in a pre-emerge application. So encourage growers to be using the right product in the right place. Remember, the herbicide label is a legal binding document and we need to follow the label. And so with that, you know, if we are doing, you know, again, with burn down type applications with our residuals and soybeans or even corn for that matter, you know, some extra care I would, you know, needs to be taken, especially if, you know, that application is occurring close to the time of planting, just make sure we're getting furrows, seed trenches and everything closed up good. Because even if, you know, corn or soybeans can tolerate the dicamba or 2,4-D, growth regulators down in the seed trench can still do some weird, funky things when things are coming up. So just encourage, you know, good cultural practices as we move forward into the growing season.
Yes, thanks, Eric. Great reminders there. Stephanie, I'll have you round it out, and then we'll open it up if anyone has any questions or anything else they want to add.
So lots of activity in my area in the last couple days. As mentioned, we missed that last system. Sure, there's a couple fields here and there that are wet, but for the most part, a lot of activity, and we may not be quite to planting yet. So some spraying when possible, and even around Springfield area last night, there was a sprayer going in the dark. And I could maybe speculate that's not normal, but maybe because of the wind issue, which has been mentioned here. I don't know for sure, or just trying to get across a lot of acres and kind of panic has set in. Also other, you know, tillage is going on, but we did start planting on our own farm some beans. Some of our fields were too wet, so we did switch to corn, just doing everything we can to try to get some acres in if possible. So to address, you know, one of the issues this year, I think that we might be facing that maybe in some years we aren't, we keep mentioning henbit. So one of the things that maybe some people may not think about with henbit and a few of the other winter annuals is that research has shown that soybean cyst nematode can reproduce on them. And so that's not often talked about. And so it's once the soil gets above 50 degrees, then they're able to start reproducing. So if we aren't able to, you know, take care of those, get rid of them in some way, and that's both in the fall as well in the spring, and we've had warmer temperatures in the fall as well. And I know some people may not do a fall type burn down program, if you start seeing a lot of henbit or maybe even purple dead nettle, which they look very, very similar, they're hard to tell apart sometimes. Those are ones where soybean cyst nematode can really reproduce quickly and highly on at a faster rate. There's a few others that may be winter annuals that they can reproduce on, but maybe not quite as well. But if you start seeing a lot of those purple out there in the fall, think about maybe even if you do a fall application, maybe do it sooner, right after the combine goes through. And anything you can do to try to just get rid of those weeds so they aren't a place for those soybean cyst nematode to reproduce. And basically, they're building up populations within your field. So that would be my answer to your question, Kelsey, today.
Good information there. Thank you. Thanks, Stephanie. Looks like Kelly's joined us from the truck. Kelly, are you able to give us an update here?
What kind of an update do you want, Kelsey?
Well, what's going on? Give me your top issue, top concern that's going on in Southern Illinois today.
I don't know that we've really got a top issue or top concern right now. I mean, a lot of the soybeans, early soybeans are up, trying to evaluate stands on those. Either guys have yet to get started because they're in a zone where it just keeps raining. Interesting that the storm pattern 2 days ago followed the eclipse pattern perfectly. I mean, inch of rain in the middle of it, nothing on either side. So just trying to get a good start everywhere.
Anything you want to say to growers as they get planting season fully underway?
Calm down. This is a marathon, not a sprint. Everybody acts like they're so far behind, and it's still April, and the ground is still relatively cold.
I'm going to have my brother call you, Kelly, so you can tell him that.
I will say this, the fear that the seed industry has put into farmers this year has paid off. Because of the lack of supply for replant and whatever, I am seeing some very deliberate planting into some very, very good conditions. You know, that's been a great positive so far.
Well, on the road, Kelly goes. The rest of the group, anything else you want to add for the recording today? Any more updates or anything else that someone brought up that you would like to comment on?
I have a question for Stephanie. Going back to the cyst nematode, are there any cover crops that would be in the same, that would do the same thing with cyst nematode that we know of? I'm assuming not, but I'm going to ask because I don't know.
Yeah, I think there are some hosts. I don't know them off the top of my head right now because it's not coming to me, but yes. There are some cover crops. I think we do that are hosts for soybean cyst nematode. I think we need to do more research into it. We are opening up right now to researchers and whoever that want to do projects and get funded from the Soybean Association. And so we often do a lot of visits with potential researchers that are pitching different projects to us. You know, the board members are the ultimate people that make the decision on what they want to fund. But I think it's interesting you bring that up because there's so many different new cover crop options that people are bringing to the table. Soybean cyst nematode's not the only one. There's others that, on our team, they're like, wait a second, I feel like that wasn't going to, there was a possibility that wasn't going to work a couple years ago because it was a host for white mold. So different things like that. And so it's not just soybean cyst nematode. It's a whole potential of different things that you are reintroducing to the system. I mean, not that, you know, I'm not trying to be negative, but these are just different things that you have to think about. And I think that's a good point, Craig.
If anyone else has anything to mention.
The only thing I was going to mention, if you are kind of being the northern guy in the group, just a little reminder to any of our growers that do have wheat in the ground, don't forget about it. We are probably two-ish weeks away in this area from our fungicide applications, and I'm afraid that we're going to get our minds wrapped around everything else that's going to be happening here in a couple of weeks, and we know how critical that fungicide application is for multiple different reasons. We actually have a mill in Mendota that it actually will give a premium on high-quality wheat, so we want to take advantage of that, obviously, whenever we can. Secondly, just kind of almost want to get Eric's thought process on this and anybody else's, but I've had a few conversations with growers who are going into some cooler temperatures, reduced tillage situations, and a conversation we've actually had is that they're going to hold off on their PPO herbicides because we know that interaction of the PPO and trying to have some tough emergence and maybe some seed treatment products that also have some haloing and different things like that could lead to a reduced stand. I'm kind of for that thought process if we're going into some cooler soil temps, but I think Eric, you're kind of the herbicide specialist on this. If you have any ideas around there, you can tell me I'm wrong too. So.
Yeah, no, I think the general thought process is definitely there. I would say, you know, I kind of categorize PPOs as kind of the worst offender to the least offender. And if we think about the worst offender would be the flumioxin, like the Valor or Fierce brands, not to pick on that company or anything, but those are probably the worst offenders as far as injury of PPO. And then we think about probably like our sulfentrazones or Authority or Spartan brands. And then probably lastly would probably be like the FomoSafe and like FlexStar or Reflex. Those would probably be the least offenders, but they can all have some issues with emergence and everything. But, you know, I had this conversation with a crop specialist yesterday is, you know, by adding those PPOs to our herbicide mix right now. Now, I know you said that you're seeing some weeds that maybe are coming a little bit earlier than what we typically see, but, you know, think about, why are we putting those PPOs in right now? What are they actually going to control? A lot of times it's to control water hemp. And so if we're planting early, is the water hemp coming up right now? And so is it really going to be a necessary evil to subject our soybeans to? But with that, I will say if you're planting non-GMO soybeans, there's no bars hold. I'm going to throw everything no matter when I'm planting it. So it's not perfect, but that's my take on it.
Sorry to go off the rails there, but that was just a kind of a thought process.
No, this is the time for discussion. I appreciate the discussion back and forth. So anything else that we want to bring up? Otherwise, we can hold it till next week.
I was just going to say that the ISCA put out a good article this week that was highlighting a article from the News Gazette here in Champaign. And it was talking about some advocacy groups forming around, you know, all this herbicide injury that a lot of trees are starting to be susceptible to. And so I just want to echo that, you know, as we're making herbicide applications this spring, or we're asking our retailers to do things that, you know, maybe are a little bit questionable, especially in these windy conditions like we've had lately, that if we abuse it, we're going to lose it. And so we need to make sure that we're making our herbicide applications as smartly as possible, just to maintain the products and technologies that we have that are available to us, because these advocacy groups are growing. They're getting a very loud voice. They're getting attention, and we got to play with them somehow or another. I don't know how we meet them halfway at this point, but we're going to have to work with them.
Yeah. Great reminder. for that. Thank you, Eric. I saw that article too, and I thought it was very interesting. So that was IFCA. If you didn't hear Eric, you can probably go on their website and find that article. Or you said it was out of the News Gazette.
It was a News Gazette in Champaign.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep. So I know they have a website you can go on and read about that issue. I'll go ahead and end the podcast here. Thank you again for coming on. I know it's right before your work day, but I know I appreciate knowing what's going around the state. The growers appreciate hearing what's going around the state from your perspective. So thank you again for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.